So, what was your favorite set so far this weekend?
I guess just because having never seen it, SJ blew my mind, and because of them being great friends and stuff. I mean, I thought the Death Pile set was amazing. Hive Mind was exactly what I needed to totally charge up before our set. So, but yeah, I mean, I want to call him Sutcliffe Hogan since he did a song, but I also could, you could call him Body Choke because they did a Body Choke song. But they were unbelievable last night. I mean, yeah. I saw.
If anyone could follow a macronym, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that'll be a highlight of heavy music for me for a long time. First time I saw White House, which was like, I guess, 22 years ago, was with Kevin in the lineup, and he absolutely, like, stole the show for me when he came out. And I think it was Right to Kill that he did. And it was so intense. I was like, you know, one of the first ultra-heavy power electronic things I'd ever seen, and I was, whoa.
So, are they any big influence for you then, like White House?
Kevin particularly. I mean, Sutcliffe Hogan way more than White House, because I always thought that when he joined White House, they actually became a much more vicious, intense band. You know, they were a little more avant-garde and experimental before, with, you know, certainly some of the... I mean, which was, you know, cool album and all, but the Sutcliffe Hogan stuff's amazing, and I continued to really be interested in his work and Body Choke. I mean, to me, you know, I'm a huge Joy Division fan, and they're like an ultra heavy, you know, mixed with a little Swans, and but still with like really dark, intense lyrics. So yeah, he's pretty amazing guy. So yeah,
what did you think of your set?
I had a blast. It was it was what we needed to do, you know, especially coming back second year last year. It was, you know, a totally chaotic set in the basement in a different way. And, you know, Olsen from Wolfeist said that we should get the Guinness World Record for problem solving because of like just the mayhem that Peter created and the crowd created with all the equipment falling apart. So it was nice to basically make it through a set. The audience was incredible, and it was just, you know, real high energy and a lot of fun. So
Peter is a real tall, like, goth.
Yeah.
All right. How long have you guys been playing with him, and like, how do you know him? Because I saw you guys a couple of times before. He was doing stuff with you.
Yeah, he's one of the, you know, earliest Bloody Minded members.
Oh, really?
But he lives out here. And, you know, I used to live out here, so we met probably 12 years ago, roughly, and he was the first replacement member of Bloody Minded, because Bloody Minded was actually, you know, like, besides me, the last two people in Intrinsic Action, my old band. So Peter was the first person to join after one of the Angel Ramos left the band, and so, I mean, he's one of my, you know, two best friends here. Him and John from Slogan are like my oldest New York, you know, tight buddies, and so Peter unfortunately doesn't get to do as many shows because of living out here, but he flies into the Midwest sometimes. He just came out to do a big Detroit show last fall with us, so yeah, and he's you know, definitely the shows are different with him, as Chris's head here can attest. And he's, you know, he absolutely turns into an animal, and it's he just, you don't know what's going to come out. It's, sometimes it's I mean, it's always over the top, and it's the real natural him just letting loose. Sometimes it's a little more on the violent side. Sometimes it's absolutely weird, and, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but he just, you know, he's like Tasmanian devil going crazy in there. So the shows definitely have a different feel than some of the straighter, you know, sets that we do, like with the Chicago lineup or whatever. So
right.
And he energizes me, certainly.
It was good for that.
Oh, yeah, definitely needed it. Just a little more for the crowd to watch him, like, you know, trying to put a chair on a table and climb on top of that and reach the ceiling. I don't know. When we played Behind the Green Door the last time in Detroit, he managed to get, it's like a kind of two-story loft kind of thing, and he managed to get up a staircase, stand on a table, and he came out across a beam. Well, first he threw a giant bag of like garbage, like probably chondritic sound paper shreds out into the audience. So it's in the middle of like this dark room, this confetti came flying. But then he's, you know, shimmied across a beam for a while and just all of us couldn't hold on to the beam any longer and just dropped down into the audience. He nearly dislocated Gary from Mammal's jaw at that show. I mean, it's very unpredictable. But not, you know, it's not like a nasty, aggressive thing at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. It's more just like a drunken fun thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty
cool. Yeah, it's great.
You guys also, you just put out a new album.
Yeah.
Correct. And I was talking to you earlier a little bit, and you record in the studio.
Yeah.
Correct? Because you were talking about how you sort of accumulate pretty high studio costs in each album.
Right.
Which is kind of different as opposed to a lot of other artists which do the bedroom recording and that sort of thing. Why do you choose to record in the studio as opposed to your house?
Well, first and foremost, probably just the quality. I'm absolutely... a technical buffoon. I have no idea really how to do things properly, and I like working with an engineer who can do it properly. I'm sure there are economical ways to work with computers or whatever at home and do it myself, but the sound quality is really important. And in the last few years, and with previous engineers, like I found a guy in Chicago who comes from more of I guess he does a lot of hip-hop and house music engineering, but he's really open-minded to doing heavy electronic stuff, noise stuff. He knows his shit as far as, like, the studio goes, and he's become more of a collaborator, and particularly on Magnetism, the new CD. He really had a huge input on how it was mixed, edited, mastered, how we sequenced the tracks. He's kind of become another member of Bloody Minded in a sense that he also masters a lot of the Intrinsic Action reissues that I've been doing, and he definitely has had input in how the last couple CDs have sounded. The same with Gift Givers. So it's nice on a collaborative effort to work with somebody outside of the band who
it sounds like outside of the power electronics
knows electronic music, knows. Yeah. Like through doing a lot of hip hop, he understands bass, and there's definitely a need to really exploit the bass because we have so much high end feedback kind of stuff, and he can really work with it all ends up being mastered, and I don't know the terms. I know there's a program called Ultra Maximizer or something, and so he really exploits all the low end frequencies, and he can fill out the song more. So nice. Yeah, it's great. His name's Brian Gaynor, and he's been excellent to work with the last few years. So,
and the. Since the first experience I had listening to Bloody Minded was Trophy, and the sound has kind of evolved a lot then, what can people expect from the new disc?
It's, in some senses, the most different because although it has vocals running throughout, there's actually really no discernible lyrics on this. So the first thing people are going to notice is that any content that you're going to get, and this is really a different thing for me because content has always been as important as the sound in anything I do, and content meaning subject matter, lyrics, graphics, whatever. There's the only thing they can draw from is the title of the album, and then take that with all the song titles, some of which are quite long. They're almost a paragraph long, some of them. So it definitely is different in the style of vocal delivery. It's a lot more like guttural, abstract, screaming and shouting and yelling and moaning and stuff.
Nice.
The synths are almost non-existent in the mix. It's just layers and layers of feedback and frequencies. And it's got elements of Gift Givers and True Crime. The production values are there, but it's that's the thing that the people have already heard. It just came out literally last Saturday, a week ago, when I got them shipped. So not a lot of people have heard it all the way through yet, but close friends and stuff have noticed right away. They're like, it's kind of freaked a lot of people out already that they can't latch on to the lyrics that they're used to with my stuff. So, yeah.
And you've been doing the Intrinsic Action reissues for a while, but you just started also doing Super 8 Loop stuff again, reissuing all the 50 older tapes and doing newer stuff. Why did you decide to bring that back?
Not to sound like an asshole, but sort of demand. A lot of people I know have been asking for them, and I thought, maybe I'll just do some little runs on them. But people start asking to, hear this stuff, and that was a nice pat on the ass. I thought maybe I should start recording some more of this stuff. Like, I moved recently and kind of unpacked all my synthesizers and thought, I could start with. And I guess also like listening to a lot of Hive Mind, just spending a lot of time with Gray and talking to him all the time. And Workbench also, Mike from Double Leopards, did a couple shows with him, and just love listening to both of what they're doing. And I thought, I should kind of think about this stuff again. So what I'm doing now every month, I figure I'm going to remix and remaster one of the old 1 through 50 Super 8 loops, and then try to get a new one recorded each month. So
nice.
2 months into it, so far so good. We'll see. Now I'm already behind the gun for March, so we'll see what happens.
It's kind of cool that, you know, you talk about Gray and how he kind of influenced you to bring it back.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was talking to him, and he was talking about how you influenced him to kind of do some of the stuff he's done. So
it's extremely sweet of him. I mean, just seeing the energy level that these guys have as far as, you know, their work ethic and stuff, from, you know, a bunch of sort of slacker stoner dudes or whatever, they're really, you know, they get a lot done. And, you know, I've had some heavy lulls in, you know, what I'm working on, so it's cool to see how much they, you know, can accomplish, and it's definitely inspiring to, you know, try to do some work myself. So yeah.
And then the other question as far as releases go is, uh-huh, you've also been doing the private series,
right?
7 inches. What's behind that? What got that started? How do you choose your artists?
Well, part of it was I just thought in my mind I would like to see some singles in this format where it, sort of contradictory to what I just told you about, like, content being really important, the full package as far as the, you know, the artwork, design, etc. I just like this idea of a really stark package, plain white cardboard sleeve, glossy sleeve, you know, a nice white inner sleeve that's lined, and then white vinyl, very limited information on the labels, and then just a simple insert, and it really to make you listen to the songs and not have anything else to kind of really go by. As far as the choice of artists, part of it was I kind of felt obligated to release 2 7-inches that were going to be, I did a series of singles on Bloodlust in the kind of mid to late 90s that probably just, I don't know if it made it even into the 2000s. It was maybe 8 of them, and it was a lot of the people I was working with at the time. So I had 2 left over, an Atrax Morgue that really was a great single, and was the A-side is very eccentric sounding. And I knew it had to be out, so I kept kind of bugging Marco to follow through on it. And then the other one was Final Solution, which is a band I used to play with in New York when I moved out here in the early 90s. And
I noticed probably, that one seemed to have the most information.
Well, yeah, there was a lot more to it. You know, Greg Scott committed suicide several years ago, and we had been kind of, it had been delayed, and then we kind of revamped the idea of putting it out. After he died, I was like, well, there's no way. I mean, we literally, like, the last email I got from him before he died was within days before he committed suicide, and it was asking me, just a little technical question about the cover artwork and stuff. So I shelved it. I was like, well, I can't do this now. But after some time had passed, I thought it was appropriate, and I thought it really deserved to be out. This is a great single. And so that got the series rolling. And then I thought, well, I want to put out some stuff that really is about what I like right now. So picking artists who I've either worked with before or, you know, have started playing with, you know, live shows. So that it made some of the choices really easy right away. With Gray, instead of doing a Hive Mind, because there's so much Hive Mind stuff out there, you know, we've done some shows with him as Cleanse, and he did a cover of an Intrinsic Action song, so I knew I wanted to do a Cleanse single. And I had to do some new Slogan stuff, because John's, again, as I said, a really old friend, and there he is, and there's going to be some interesting developments in the Slogan department on the label as well this year. Angel of Decay, I mean, I've done a lot of stuff with Death Pile and with Dead World, so I did a show with Jonathan here at Tonic last October, and it was amazing sounding, and his new CD is great. So that was a no-brainer. So it's still going to mostly be friends.
Was that the last Death Pile show?
This was just this past November, and it was, I did a solo show. It was the first time I did a solo thing in New York.
And it was as Angel of Decay?
Yeah, it was as Angel of Decay, yeah. And so I knew I had to do that.
I'm sorry. How was it getting to see the last Death Pile show?
The new last Death Pile.
Because
the last Death Pile show was, it was totally disappointing to have to realize that was the last Death Pile show, because Jonathan's one of my favorite, front men. I did a show years ago, Intrinsic Action, Death Pile, and White House, and Jonathan was with Dead World. And Jonathan is just an incredible, it's cool to see like a metal front man doing power electronics. So the other night was amazing. I mean, and spent a lot of time with Mike Connolly in the last couple of years, and he really, I think he did it justice. And it was weird because it was like two of my worlds colliding that are definitely kind of separate worlds. I mean, the Detroit scene is very different from the power electronic scene, but those guys definitely show a lot of love for, you know, some of the stuff we've been doing. And so Connolly did a great job, and it was Jonathan was up against the potential for like goofiness in the audience, and he came out and did a totally strong set.
Nice.
Credit to him for.
I thought Intrinsic Action, it's always been one of my favorite titles for a project.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Like, how did you come up with that name? And that obviously started before Bloody Minded.
Yeah.
What new guy started on this whole scene and everything?
And
who was, like, the first person you had in contact, like, outside of your, you know, own personal circle, too?
The Intrinsic Action name is probably not going to be terribly interesting. I was one of the first bands I was really into was SPK, so I knew I wanted something scientific sounding, so you know, it was not much better than a random page stop in a medical encyclopedia or something. But
it sounds really philosophical too.
It's got, you know, it has its medical or scientific term, but it seemed multi-layered, but there's no great story behind it beyond that. The first contact was really Pete from White House, Peter Sotos. I mean, he was the first person to really help me with getting contacts. I mean, I've known Pete for, I don't know, 22, 23 years, and he's just been a great friend with, you know, supporting the stuff I've done forever. And so he got me kind of on the road with connections, and that's how I was really able to start getting the first Intrinsic Action tapes, you know, networked. And through him, I met, you know, people that I'm still friends with, like a lot of the Italians that I do work with, like Andrea from the Sodality and Paolo from Sigil Mesh, She Ran the Stimulants, you know, all came through some of the first contacts I had. So it's, you know, not just affected the music, but, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm like my adult life with friends. Yeah, it's great.
Do you know that there was a New York hardcore band with the same name for a short while?
Intrinsic Action?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I used to have a record.
Wow, no, because it's weird, because, you know, we always knew there were a couple other Final Solutions, one of which was a skinhead band, and that was always a huge problem, especially since the Final Solution stuff came out on AWB, which was,
gotten a lot of, I'm curious what kind of reactions, you know, some of the worst reactions or comments you've gotten from people in regards to like stuff like Pro Anna or the AWB stuff.
AWB stuff is just happily long put to bed, because it's, I don't want to go into it. It's just stupid on certain levels. There were great releases on the label, but there was some, it was just ill-informed in, you know, most other levels. Hey, Sam. But as far as the stuff on Gift Givers, it's not. Actually, someone really close to the band, a woman who comes to all our shows and is a good friend of Ed's, who's one of, you know, the longest, you know, really the long term member of Bloody Minded, had a really bad reaction to Pro Anna and Pro Mia until she was sat down with the lyrics and saw that they're not. Lyrics like, say, power electronics that glorify serial killers. You know, we definitely have a voyeuristic interest in a lot of the subject matter that's on there, but it's. I think the lyrics show that it's not just a goof or a flippant response to that stuff, and there's definitely other messages in there. I mean, Pro Mia, the final line is, please don't lose hope. I mean, I don't want to sound, you know, ultra positive or new age or anything. Oh, my phone's ringing. But it's, No, it's okay. So it's, we do put a different spin than probably a lot of people would expect for whether we are still or, you know, whatever, a power electronics band. I don't even know if we're a power electronics band anymore, but our, that album in particular definitely goes in a different direction with lyrical content to kind of definitely turn it away from the typical, stereotypical, whatever, you know, type of lyrics that people
expect. Noticed you've always had a little bit of, you've gone beyond just those main themes that seem to follow some of those, just talking about even sort of like some punk, like punk aesthetic to it. These are the people that, these are the fuckheads down the street from me and shit, you know?
Yeah, and then I think, you know, the new album Magnetism, when people see the song titles on that, it's not just, it's not the people down the street, it's all from personal experience, it's a really weird record because it kind of closes the door on like about a 20-year period of my life, and it's, you know, it's 100% stuff that's, you know, I've dealt with people. So, yeah, it, you know, there's definitely more to it than the typical. And the punk aesthetic has come through, especially with Intrinsic Action. I mean, all the old Intrinsic Action covers were totally influenced by, like, Discharge record covers and stuff. So, yeah, it's a huge part. Yeah.
Well, it's getting sort of loud, so yeah. If you guys have any other questions?
My last question, how much leather do you have to own to be a member of Bloody Minded?
Wow. As you probably saw last night, like, Isidro does not own leather. It's not a strict thing, but you know.
So vegans can join the band.
Oh no, vegans can join the band. Of course.
The question is whether or not they wear more skin halfway through the set than leather.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Peter, I heard moon the crowd unintentionally. It's funny because he had a different pair of pants on at the New Brunswick show, and he's like, "Man, I'm really probably gonna go for it tonight. I'm gonna wear my old pants," and they totally just, you know, came apart at the seam. So no, we're open-minded to. I prefer everybody being all black, but some people just don't feel comfortable. If you've worn leather for 20 years, you can deal with all the, you know, the jabs that people make at you, but it's all right.
Any last words?
No, just to, you know, totally appreciate, you know, the interest and the time, and, you know, great to meet you guys, and hopefully there'll be some shows in the future, etc. So, yeah, thank you, and I can't wait to check out what you guys put online and stuff. So, yeah, thank you guys.
Mark Solotroff, Bloody Minded.
Thank you.